Amelia did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, the NHS workforce crisis meets a simple contradiction. People who want to train as nurses cannot access the courses, while the courses themselves run half empty because Treasury spending limits treat public investment as a cost rather than the route by which qualified staff reach understaffed wards.
I grew up watching my mum come home exhausted from her shifts as a healthcare assistant at the nursing homes around Dalston. She'd tell me about residents who hadn't seen a doctor in weeks, about medication errors because the staff were stretched so thin, about how much she cared for these people but how little time the system gave her with each one. My dad drove the 149 bus route and he'd see the same thing from a different angle. Elderly passengers struggling to get to medical appointments because the GP surgeries were so overbooked they were scheduling routine checkups months out. When I got into King's College London to study biomedical sciences, I knew exactly where I wanted that degree to lead. I wanted to train as a nurse and come back to work in Hackney, where I'd grown up seeing how desperately we needed more qualified healthcare staff. The local surgeries were running at impossible ratios. I'd later learn it was one GP for every 1,717 patients, when the recommended safe level is closer to one for every 1,800. You could see it in the waiting rooms, people sitting there for hours, parents with sick children who'd been told the earliest appointment was in 3 weeks, elderly residents who'd given up trying to book routine care altogether. In 2019, I applied to the adult nursing programme at City University of London. I scored high on the entrance exams, sailed through the interviews. The admissions team told me I was an excellent candidate, exactly the kind of person they wanted in the programme. Then came the conversation I didn't expect. Unfortunately, the admissions officer explained, there are no funded places available this year due to Treasury spending constraints on Health Education England's budget. We'd encourage you to reapply next year. I accepted this. It sounded reasonable. Budgets are tight, I thought. Public spending has to be managed carefully. I spent the year working as a healthcare assistant through various agencies, thinking I was getting valuable experience while waiting for the funding to return. In 2020, I contacted Homerton University Hospital NHS Foundation Trust directly. They ran a nursing apprenticeship scheme, and I thought this might be a route around the university funding problem. The response was swift and apologetic. The programme has been suspended because we simply don't have the funding to take on new apprentices. Again, I accepted this. The NHS was under pressure. Everyone knew that. Of course, there would be budget constraints. I spent 2 more years working as a healthcare assistant, covering shifts at GP surgeries across Hackney where I could see the staffing crisis up close. Doctors were seeing 40, 50 patients a day. Nurses were managing caseloads that should have been split between 2 or 3 people. Patients were waiting weeks for appointments that should have been available within days. But when I asked about training opportunities, the answer was always the same. We'd love to have more nurses, but there's just no funding for training places. In 2022, I tried again, this time at the University of East London. The admissions process was encouraging. They told me my application was strong. My experience as a healthcare assistant was exactly what they looked for. My motivation was clear. Then came the familiar conversation. Unfortunately, Health Education England has capped the number of commissioned places and we're already oversubscribed. The money just isn't there from government. I walked away from that meeting feeling defeated, but something was nagging at me. I'd seen this same story 3 times now, from 3 different institutions. The people existed, me, and dozens of others I'd met who wanted to train. The need existed. Every surgery I'd worked in was desperately understaffed. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The following week, I was walking past City University's nursing building when I noticed something that didn't fit the story I'd been told. Through the windows, I could see into the lecture halls, and they were half empty during what should have been peak teaching hours. Students were spread out across rooms that could clearly hold twice as many people. I stopped and asked a current nursing student I met outside about this. "Yeah?" she said. Several of our cohorts are running well under capacity. There are empty seats in most of our classes. The lecturers keep saying they could easily take more students. The clinical placements are available. The equipment is there. The staff are there. But apparently, there's some budget cap that means they can't fill the places. That was the moment something shifted for me. I stood there looking at that building, physical spaces, sitting half empty, qualified lecturers with time in their schedules, clinical placements going unfilled, and hundreds of people like me who wanted to train as nurses but had been told there was no money. If the building existed and the teachers existed and the placements existed and the people existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? I started to understand that what I'd been told wasn't really about money at all. The UK government issues the pound. It doesn't need to find pounds before it spends them. It spends them into existence. When Health Education England said there was no funding for training places, they weren't describing a law of nature. They were describing a political choice. Someone in the Treasury had decided that connecting unemployed people to empty training places wasn't worth the spending. They'd decided that leaving GP surgeries understaffed was preferable to investing in the nurses who could fill those gaps. The excuse had never been about whether the resources existed. The building was there, the lecturers were there, the clinical placements were there, the people who wanted to train were there. The excuse was about whether the government that prints the currency was willing to spend that currency into the places and people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still working as a healthcare assistant while the training places sit half empty and the surgeries stay understaffed. But I understand now what I didn't understand at the start. When they say there is no money, they mean we have chosen not to spend the money. When they say the budget has been cut, they mean we have decided that this is not a priority. When they say we cannot afford it, they mean we will not authorise it. The government that issues the currency told me it could not find enough of that currency to train the nurses that Hackney desperately needs. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They all were. I see the same story playing out across every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says, the cupboard is bare. The cupboard isn't bare. The decision is to keep it locked.
What Amelia experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique works by citing economists or commentators who treat government budgets like household budgets, as though repeating this analogy makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies used to parade scientists who insisted smoking was harmless, carefully selecting only those whose findings supported their product. The credentials were real, but the selection was rigged. In Amelia's case, every institution that rejected her cited the same fiscal constraint. Health Education England's budget cap, Treasury spending limits, the familiar refrain that there is no money. When challenged, officials would gesture toward economic orthodoxy. Unnamed experts who supposedly proved that government spending must be rationed like a family's weekly shopping budget. But the UK government issues its own currency. It doesn't need to find pounds before it spends them, any more than a football referee needs to find points before awarding them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Hackney North and Stoke Newington, those resources were sitting idle. Empty training places, qualified instructors, eager students, understaffed clinics. The austerity objection claims economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Hackney North and Stoke Newington rank 67 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 2. There are 1,279 registered charities in the constituency, according to the Charity Commission Register. Local organisations received £47.1 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.